Welcome back to another episode of Friends from Work, a podcast about all things in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, hosted by me, Robbie, and by my good friend, Kyle. Now, it's been a couple of weeks since we've been here, since we've been in the studio recording the old podcast here. And, you know, we've missed it. We've missed you guys. It was nice. We realized we've been pumping these episodes out for several months straight now. And so
I don't think we had a week off, right? Since September 2019. I mean, maybe Christmas. We've pretty much done episodes every week for 2 years almost.
It was nice it was nice that the Marvel gods gave us a bit of a break there. Even though I am starting to get, you know, I need my fix. I'm ready for Loki, Kyle. But
see, that's the point, though.
Exactly.
Now I'm rejuvenated. I'm ready to go. I'm on fire. You're gonna get A level, Kyle Scunable, baby.
And not only are we back, we are back in full force. We have got all sorts of stuff that we've been working on. That was the other thing that was really fun about the break, is it gave us a second to kind of look at some bigger picture things, to work on some things that we've been wanting to do for a while, things we've been talking with y'all about. So, you know, over the next week or two, there's going to be some fun stuff happening. And I know we say that all the time, but yeah. I think this one's pretty special. A couple special things.
Next week, this time, we will have a merchandise item available for sale. That's all I'm gonna say, which is a lot. I just said a lot, but next week, check back next Monday. Can't wait for that. Also, we had a fun interview that we recorded that comes out this week. So this is a double whammy week, you know, a twofer.
Oh yeah. Oh, and it doesn't stop there. There's
no.
Next week we've got even more, and then the week after that, we have even more, and then we're at Loki, baby.
Yeah, it's actually sneaking up on us pretty quickly here, especially now that Loki's moved up to Wednesdays 2 days earlier. We're talking not that long from now, which, man, I love. And if you want to stay in touch with us on all that stuff, don't forget, follow us on social media at the FFW Podcast. Leave us messages there. Connect with us there. We love that. And don't forget to rate, review, subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. And you can subscribe to us on YouTube, where we post the full-length videos of some of our interviews that we've been doing. And that can be kind of fun if you would rather watch the interview rather than just listen. The two-week break not only rejuvenated us, not only allowed us to plan for the future, but a nice thing is it actually allowed us to get some space away from the Falcon and Winter Soldier. Mm. I actually feel more prepared to reflect on it today than I do if we put it out the same week or the next week.
Right.
So,
which again, I mean, that's kind of the beauty of, I know that the way, you know, everything shifted with Black Widow, and I mean, everything's been shifting on the schedules with these shows since COVID started, but, you know, in some ways, it was kind of a bummer that we had this break. But yeah, going straight from WandaVision to Falcon Winter Soldier, we kind of had to make a really quick pivot mentally and emotionally. And so we did that WandaVision wrap up really quickly and didn't really have the opportunity to sit with that one the way that we did with this. So I do think there are some pros there.
Right. So I personally got a chance to rewatch all of WandaVision and all of the Falcon and Winter Soldier. And then I did watch the Marvel's Assembled, I think it's called, the behind the scenes, basically, look at the Falcon and the Winter Soldier. So I feel pretty prepared. But I know you also got a chance to go back and watch some of the Captain America movies, right?
I did. And, you know, one thing that I've been meaning to say through this entire Falcon Winter Soldier era is that as a Cap fan, I'm just very grateful for how, like, if you look on our social media feeds, on our Instagram feed especially, it's just full of Cap stuff for the past, you know, 6-8 weeks or whatever at this point. And that is just such a fun thing for me, given like my own fandom. And I am really grateful that it's a show that we got. And being able to go back and watch these Captain America films, and we'll talk about this, and fitting this new installment within that mythos was just a really fun exercise.
Here's kind of my goal for today's episode, okay? I think we should reflect on the quality of the shows and give our critiques and our review of it, kind of now that we've had 2 weeks, and then we'll rank it and how it fits in our overall MCU picture. And then I want to transition from that into just where are we left in the MCU right now. Let's have a discussion there, okay? So let me first just kind of say some of my overarching feelings when I went back and rewatched. As I said, I got a chance to go back and watch WandaVision, and that has had some time. I have not rewatched it since it was on air. And then I got a chance to watch this too. I was struck by a lot of stuff in that process. First of all, I think on paper, you and I had kind of tossed out this idea that because WandaVision was so built on not knowing what was going to happen and all of that, whereas Falcon and Winter Soldier was more just a drama with some action that wasn't necessarily built on like twists and turns, that we maybe thought that the Falcon and the Winter Soldier would be a little bit more rewatchable and WandaVision would kind of been like a one-time deal. And for me personally, I'm trying to find a weird balance in this episode because I need everyone to know I'm so thankful for these shows. I'm thankful for Marvel. I'm thankful for these movies. I love all of it. Like, I love all of it. So my fandom is there no matter what. And I'm so thankful, a lot of tangents here. I'm so thankful that Disney Plus added these shows because I think we get this character work and this character development, especially on characters that were maybe somewhat, not neglected, but put aside in the big films, to now like do some serious heavy lifting with them. And in that way, both Wanda and Vision and Bucky and Sam have really elevated in my book because now I have that development, okay? But all that being said, to go back to what I was originally saying, I don't think WandaVision and the Falcon and Winter Soldier are even in the same conversation quality-wise, ballpark-wise. WandaVision was so much more rewatchable to me than the Falcon and Winter Soldier and more than I ever thought it would be. I literally called you because I put WandaVision on and I was immediately right back in. I have no problems almost with that show. It's almost perfect to me. I think the driving factor being grief and depression and love can still move you so much emotionally.
Right.
More than just, oh, what's going to happen, right? So, like, I got the, oh, what's going to happen when I was watching it the first time. But even on the second time, I still, all the emotional marks hit. And like, I even picked up on some things that I didn't before. And it was so well thought out and so detailed. And I'm going to transition to this real quick, and then you can talk. Sorry. But when I was watching Falcon and the Winter Soldier, I can't help but, like, how do I say this? It almost felt like a chore, like a burden to do. Like, I wasn't super excited to put the next episode on. I found myself getting more distracted, putting it on and doing something else while I was watching it. Whereas WandaVision was like in my headphones, dark room, on the computer, that's it. And I don't
Which
know.
Which part of that may also be length too, you know?
Yeah, yeah. But like I immediately wanted to go to the next one. So in the next few minutes, I'm going to dive into why do I think that is, but that's kind of my overarching thoughts.
I should say I have not gotten the chance to go back and rewatch WandaVision since the finale. I do want to do that. It's been a bit. I wanted to prioritize Falcon Winter Soldier and kind of go through that journey ahead of this episode. And so I'll probably revisit WandaVision soon, probably as we... It actually might be a great thing to watch ahead of Loki. But what you said about it not being you know, the show itself not lending itself to a rewatch, at least, you know, prior to you actually doing the rewatch, is something that's like, it's been interesting because whenever I finished Falcon Winter Soldier, I was immediately curious to rewatch it, not because necessarily I was like, oh my gosh, my mind's blown with how good it was, but there was just like, I wanted to see it kind of as a complete unit because there was some, like, I wanted to go back and see like Sharon knowing what we know about the Power Broker. I wanted to kind of see some of those early Isaiah scenes again. I wanted to see some of the early John Walker scenes again in light of where he goes, and just the like fanboy in me wanted to watch that last episode again because I just had a lot of fun with that, as I said last time. With WandaVision, you know, I was talking to a friend of mine about it, and he compared it to Interstellar, which is a movie I know you and I both love, and it's a movie that me and my friend both love a lot. And
which I totally get.
You know, it's heavy emotionally. It's heavy emotionally. It's kind of trippy. You're sort of trying to get your bearings the whole time, but and then you end and you're like, holy cow, that was a masterpiece that just kind of happened to me. But you're not, or for me at least, whenever I finish Interstellar, I'm not like, let's roll it back, like, let's go again. You know, it's like the way I might even be with other Nolan films. You know, like, it's just a, because you kind of sit in it. And I think as fun as parts of WandaVision were, it felt very much like it was a journey I had gone on. And when I got to the end, it almost just, there wasn't really any instinct for me to kind of restart it the way that I would other things, even within the MCU. And
that's because it's not very donut-y. It's very,
for sure,
steak and potatoes-y. But when you're ready for that healthy meal, it's still as good as you remember.
I've never doubted that. And I think we're both on the same page with WandaVision being like very much a cut above Falcon Winter Soldier. But in some ways I think it's just, it's difficult because they are different in kind. You know, it's not just different in degree. Like you're dealing with something. And even then, right, you can still make kind of qualitative analysis and say that one is better, even if they're doing different things. So that's totally fair. But it is like, to me, it's a little bit like comparing, you know, like Guardians and Winter Soldier, right? Like, not that WandaVision is like Guardians, but my point being, like, they're so different. They're doing such different things. And I don't know how, like, obviously we have to rank those in certain spots on our list, but I don't know that, you know, I would ever fault Winter Soldier for not being as like fun and creative and as emotional as Guardians.
No,
because, you know, that's just not really what the film calls for.
Right. And I get that. That's why I say, like, okay, I can review it on a level of, did it do visual stuff well? Yes or no?
Right.
Was it well acted? Does the dialogue flow and work? Does it tell a good story? But then I'm also factoring in just, how do I feel emotionally? Like, does it actually make me, like, move me? And so does it move me in a way like towards tears? Does it move me in a way towards chills? Does it move me in a way towards like wanting to cheer? Like, those are different things. And so even if it's like, if Guardians is doing one thing different than the other, I'm still judging just based off the gauge of my emotions. Like, how heightened are they? Like, how into the story am I? And I guess
Right. Then
I'm also ranking it on, how rewatchable is it? Like, that's a factor. Like, and that's a little bit, the way you talk about Interstellar, that's how I've always felt a little bit with Infinity War and Endgame. Whereas, like, Endgame might be the better movie, but it just takes a little more effort to do. What I was struck by is, like, maybe WandaVision's not something I would literally put on, like, once every month and just have it on in the background. I get that. But WandaVision was the one that felt easily rewatchable, whereas Falcon Winter Soldier felt like a burden. That was unique to me, because I thought, based on everything we're saying, it would be the other way. Look, I think it's kind of like this. When I rewatched WandaVision, you found more things that kind of enhanced the show, and you were able to appreciate the things that we already appreciated even more. And then I noticed, like, any of the concerns we had raised about, like, did the finale feel rushed? Did some of the visuals look a little off? All of those were eased with the rewatch. It didn't go the other way. Hmm. And part of that with WandaVision was, you know, we were watching it once a week. When you can actually just binge it, the finale mm-hmm. doesn't stand alone as, like, a separate episode as much, because you just kind of go right. boom, 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 boom. And so, like, it feels like it's building towards that. And then what happens feels very natural. It doesn't feel rushed. You get what you want. And the visuals even look better than I thought. There's maybe a couple times, but nothing out of the blue at all. And then I think mm-hmm. in general, your tensions are just down from, oh, how's this going to end? You know, the Endgame thing. How are we going to land the plane? Right. Oh, you're so nervous. Falcon Winter Soldier, for some reason, when I went back and rewatched it, it was the exact opposite. Like, the things that bothered me more. Like, I was like, yeah, I'm right about that. And a few things that I caught didn't necessarily enhance the show.
Hmm.
And then again, I'm just going to end it by saying, it's still really well done. Like, I still really enjoyed it, and it did so many things well. So I'm not trying to be negative, but, like, to me, when I'm choosing, those two aren't in the same tier.
No, no, and they're not in the same tier for me either. I am interested to kind of circle back to this, if not ahead of Loki, since that's coming soon. Maybe it'll be another good conversation to have ahead of Doctor Strange, since this will obviously lead directly into that. But, you know, as I look back on WandaVision, it's funny you say that, because the things that I look back on as enjoying the most are, one, like the fun sitcom things, which were especially fun in the moment, and I've wondered if I would enjoy as much on a second watch. It sounds like if my experience is like yours, then yes. And then secondly, the thing that I really loved was just episode 8 in general. Like, that is an episode that I, like, that is a you know, whatever, 40-minute segment of the MCU that is maybe as good or better than any other 40-minute segment of the MCU, with the exception of the final, you know, battle and Endgame. And maybe even, I don't know, I mean, it's doing some more interesting stuff even than that. I won't get into that. But my point being, like, it's really, really good. One of the things I do as I was watching Falcon Winter Soldier, and we can talk about this more in a second, and got to that final episode, I did appreciate that it, and this is more in keeping with the show in general, right? But that it didn't suddenly take, for me at least, any, like, weird turns, the way that, like, there is a little part of me that is curious to go back and watch WandaVision and see how I feel whenever Agnes comes out into Agatha Harkness fully into the, like, there's something about that visual. I wonder how well that will age for me, because I feel like...
I don't get that, because her name is literally Scarlet Witch. So why are we surprised that she's dealing with witches? Why is that so shocking?
It's not that it's so shocking. I just don't know if I look back on loving so much in terms of the visuals of that show, and it just felt like it got a little bit, like, it maybe veered a bit into the cheese some with the way that she was, with the purple and, like, the long nails. And it just looked like, it looked like a Disney witch, you know?
Time it does that really is maybe the first conversation she has in the finale with Wanda, where she's holding the kids. Like, that's, like, she's obviously floating and doing that. But even by the end fight, I don't think you would feel that way, because it's so CGI'd that, like, it doesn't look like what you're saying. It's not Catherine Hahn literally levitating. But again, this is not a WandaVision episode. I see what you're saying. I just didn't feel that way. Or maybe I'm so invested in Wanda and Vision at that point that I don't care, maybe.
Well, and again, this is me reflecting on what, like, something that happened 2.5-3 months ago. And so I can't, you're in a better spot to speak to that than I am. I think what I am saying is just that I felt like, Maybe this is a broader point. As I look back on WandaVision, it was such a different watching experience to me, because every week, right, we would get on here and we would ask, like, okay, what does this mean? Holy cow, are the X-Men coming? Whatever, right? Like, there was always, you just had no idea where we were going. You'd had no idea what the next episode was going to feel like, what the tone was going to be like because of all the shifting sets and everything. And it was just such a different experience. And I think that the more it kept you on your toes, almost the better, because it was sort of leaning into that. Falcon Winter Soldier was very different to me, because I remember now looking back and some of the things that we asked in the episodes, the show doesn't necessarily shine by keeping you on your toes, because there were times where, like, I just couldn't quite figure out in the moment where we were heading, not in a like, oh wow, this is crazy, but more like, what is the through line necessarily? Like, what is the thing to latch on to? And I think that's why, for me, on a rewatch, I guess I would say it this way. I don't know that WandaVision can climb much higher for me than it already is. I'm sure it won't dip down at all. And I will probably enjoy it as much as I ever did. If not, yeah, maybe a little bit more, just because I tend to like a lot of things on a second watch. But Falcon Winter Soldier, I do think, you know, we've talked about how each episode felt like a bit of a MCU movie that you pulled out, right? Like, that's something we've sort of talked about is unique to Falcon Winter Soldier as compared to WandaVision, which really lends itself to the serial format. And I felt that a lot. Like, whenever I got a chance to kind of just binge through all six episodes and sort of watch them as the next, like, you know, one piece installment in the Captain America franchise, it did work. For me, it worked considerably better. Like, I think being able to see, like, even that first episode again and the second episode in light of the finale, like, having watched that relatively recently and seeing kind of some of the symmetry there, like, stuff that I felt like we hadn't dealt with in a bit whenever I first watched the finale, and some characters, some threads I thought had maybe been left dangling for too long, definitely don't feel that way to me when watching it kind of in a block. Now, whether that's, you know, you could argue, well, it's a show that came out once a week, so that's kind of a flaw. Like, it just depends on how it's meant to be watched. But I feel, I guess this is all a really long way of saying, for me, I had a very different experience rewatching than you did, I think. And I don't know if it's because I was oriented in Captain America world, or if it's just because I, you know, really love that particular corner of the MCU. But I was telling Candace, I had a really, really good time. And I think that it probably went up a couple of notches for me from where I would have ranked it prior to rewatching.
Here's what I loved about it. I love the growth and development in Sam. Mm-hmm. I love the exploration of Bucky and what does it look like for a character who has that kind of past to have to just deal with that. On the behind the scenes thing I watched, Kari Skoglund, the director, talked about how this show is kind of about Sam's future and Bucky's past. Like, that's the two thing they're having to reflect on. And I really like that. I really liked them diving into the race stuff, especially when it comes to Isaiah.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoyed seeing Zemo again. And I really enjoyed this very, as we said, like, down-to-earth, political, grounded look at the effects of the blip and what that looks like. So there is still a lot from the show that I took away really enjoying. You know, what's interesting is when I was watching the behind the scenes, Robbie, a couple things that I took away from this that I feel like our listeners should know. First of all, this show, I think way more than WandaVision, hit pandemic challenges like crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
They were literally going to film a huge chunk of it in Puerto Rico, and Puerto Rico had an earthquake to where they couldn't go down there because the infrastructure was so damaged. So then they audibled to go do a bunch of it in Prague, And while they were in Prague, only for like 3 days, the pandemic shut everything down and they had to like emergency fly people back to America so they didn't get stuck in Europe.
I remember when that happened. I remember Sebastian Stan posting about that.
Yeah. And so then even on the restart, it was already so disjointed with locations and changing plans and all that, that I think partly because of the world nature of this, how they're traveling and they're going around to different places, whereas WandaVision's kind of in Westview. I think they probably could get away with WandaVision was on set in Atlanta. So there's not a ton of pandemic challenges. You know what I mean? As far as logistically, whereas this one had all kinds of logistical challenges, and it's such a bummer, but I do think I feel that a little bit on a rewatch. Like, it's a bummer, and I'm actually amazed how much they pulled off, and they talk in the behind the scenes about how grateful they are for the crew, like a crew of hundreds of people, literally, that were able to change schedules and pull this off, like, you know, find different places to film, and it's crazy. But I do think I feel that a little bit, and another fascinating thing to me, Robbie, was they specifically talk about the fight scene on top of the trucks and how...
That's funny.
Listen to this though, Robbie. Listen to this. This is amazing. My eye is getting too keen. I'm getting too good at this. They talk about how originally they were going to do it on these trucks and then CGI just some of the background. But basically through all these challenges and different things, you have to watch it. There's a lot longer explanation. They ended up essentially CGIing everything. They're standing on these two like truck looking things, but everything else is CGI. The background, like even even when like John Walker falls off and he rolls, you know, and there's like a car that was in wherever, Atlanta, and they needed it to look like Germany, whereas they were originally planning on doing that in Germany. So like they had to CGI the back and just all this stuff. But I was watching going, that's what I felt. That's why I was correct that that one episode did look a little visually off-putting because it is 100% CGI'd, 100%.
And I will say, I on this, I was going to bring that up on the latest watch. I did notice that more, not enough to where I was like really soured on it, but I did pick up on what you were saying from last time, where I didn't. And again, I mean, to their credit, or to your credit or my lack of eye there, it didn't pull me out of it the way it did some people on that first watch.
Sure.
And so, you know, I am impressed that they were able to do a good job, especially given those circumstances. But yeah, I can see that. And that is fascinating that there is a specific reason for that one scene, like you pointed out.
And it's fascinating that I caught it. Come on. That something felt weird. two other things from the behind the scenes, and then let's rank it. I'm always just struck by how much care and thought goes into these stories. And that's obvious, but I love hearing it so much. I love hearing it from the actor. Like, you get to listen to interviews from Sebastian Stan talking about like the thought that he puts into Bucky Barnes specifically. And I just love watching these characters have to like inherit and like let their role like take over themselves. And then also getting to hear the writers and directors, like they're so aware of all these things we're talking about, Robbie. Like they're aware of the greater MCU because of Kevin. Like Kevin's there and like, so they know where they have to go and they know like why that wouldn't make sense. And like Sebastian Stan is sensitive to like every iteration we've got of Winter Soldier, like how do I make it new, but also not feel out of place? Because if you've just watched Civil War, like, does this make sense? And like, they're just aware of all of that. And I love the care and thought. And then I'm always blown away by the way they can recreate these sets. I remember talking about that with like, I think it was Iron Man 3 behind the scenes. And just like these Marvel sets, like when we talked to Desmond Chiam, are just bigger than you've ever seen. You know, they're so ridiculous. And like Madripoor in particular is this alley they found in Atlanta that had like this really tight, like not much room for cars and like these rundown buildings. And then they built out in that alley the train tracks down the middle of the road and all the different bars and the lights and like made it look like Vietnam, he says, meets like Hong Kong or something. Like he blend that all together in Atlanta and it looks so cool. Like, do you remember when Zemo is walking down the stairs into the Madripoor for the first time, how cool that looked.
Right.
To watch how they actually create that always blows my mind. So that's my other takeaways.
Yeah, I mean, I think, one, if nothing else, one thing that you can never really fault the MCU for is a lack of care or a lack of thought, right? Like, I think whatever issues you may have with any given projects, at least, you know, for the last 5-6 years of Marvel projects, it really feels like the folks that they're bringing on are really taking it seriously and are really fans of what it is that they're doing. And I do think that you can generally feel that. And I think that's one of the things that keeps us so invested, even as things, you know, it's not that every single thing is going to be a home run or that every single thing is going to resonate with us on the same level as others. But I do think that, like, the thing that makes this fan community kind of unique from other massive franchises and IP is that it feels very much like we're kind of, like, as cheesy as it is, a little bit in it together. Like, it feels like Kevin is a fan, like a genuine fan of these characters, and that he wants to make sure that the people he brings in don't share his vision in this kind of, like, he's going to be tyrannical and micromanage, but just in the, like, I want to make sure that whoever is working on this stuff is as excited about it as I am. And I think that that matters.
Oh, and my last thought before ranking this is every time you hear Malcolm Spellman, who is kind of the creator of the show, talk on this behind the scenes, I think you're going to walk away impressed. It got me excited for Captain America 4 with Sam Wilson because he has that Kevin level of care too, it seems like. Like the last speech, he specifically like worked through that with Anthony Mackie for 2 hours on the phone because like Anthony so wanted it to feel natural as a black man in America, like that a black man would be saying that.
Right.
And he talks about the buddy cop shtick and just some of the writing things. I walked away going, okay, like I'm excited to see what he does on the next one.
Yeah. No, I love that. And that's kind of a perfect transition as we get into ranking about kind of my biggest takeaways from the show and what really stuck with me, especially on this latest rewatch. I'm fully aware of some of the issues and some of those were smoothed over. A lot of those I would say were smoothed over on this latest watch, but some I still get. I mean, there are times where the chemistry isn't quite locked in. There are times where the writing I think could be a tad better. And then like, you know, what we just talked about with certain visual moments. However, what's so interesting about this show to me is parts of it feel kind of on par with like an Ant-Man to me in terms of just general quality and kind of like how much it sort of moves the ball forward for me.
But you have to give it credit for what it's trying to do impact wise.
Well, right. And I was going to say other parts of it are to me really, really powerful. And I think I should say, like, because I've become known on this podcast as being a big Captain America fan, that one of the things that I've been really impressed by is the fact that the MCU made me that way. Like, I grew up a Spider-Man fan. I obviously like superheroes. I've never been one to really read Captain America comics a ton. The first Captain America comics I ever read were Sam Wilson, funnily enough, a couple years ago. Because like it Steve Rogers has been written by some incredible writers and worked on by incredible creators. So I don't want to denigrate that, but I think that the character, for a lot of the reasons that we've discussed during the Falcon and Winter Soldier, the Captain America character has always been a little strange to me, a little anachronistic these days, and even a little problematic. And it's just not, I'm not one of these, you know, like put a flag on my car kind of a guys. And so it's not that I like Captain America out of some sort of super like hyper patriotism thing.
Right.
It's
that's
because
fair.
Of, you know, it's what they've done with the, you know, what, and what Chris Evans did. And we've talked a lot about that. And you know, the course that I think, Joe Johnson set him on and, but I say all that to say that just because we're dealing with a you know, Captain America kind of property here with this show does not in and of itself mean that I would enjoy it all. It really had to stick to the DNA of what I had liked about this particular iteration and take on Cap that we've gotten here in the MCU. And I think what's just crazy to me is, and I may be kind of in the minority here, and that's totally fine, but as I was sitting down to rank this, I was thinking exactly what you were talking about, where, okay, I want to be mindful of the objective factors. I want to be mindful of certain, you know, kind of qualitative analyses that have to be done. But at the same time, I've kind of got to do a gut check too. Like I have to like look at this list of MCU things again, almost all of which we love in one form or another.
Right, right.
So this gets
it's
really
so
difficult.
So important that people remember that.
Right. I mean, even the very bottoms of our lists, like I still think have more to offer than a lot of other movies.
We love watching Thor the Dark World, and that's my 23 of 25, and I love watching it.
Right. And so I think as I'm trying to parse these out, and it gets harder and harder because, frankly, the quality is going up generally, like especially in terms of what's been happening in like phase 3 and phase 4, to where it just is like, what we talked about. Really, once you got past like 2014, it's just, there are a lot of really, really great things happening in the MCU. So you have to start really splitting hairs. And so I say that to say that like, there are some movies that I love a lot that just don't necessarily have those like chill moments for me or like cheer inducing moments like what we've talked about. And for me, even though certain episodes of this show didn't necessarily do it for me as much or certain moments and episodes, by the time I get to the finale in Falcon Winter Soldier, I don't know what it is, but I can't get through it without getting emotional. Like whenever.
Oh, good. That's what I want to hear from somebody.
You know, it's, and I know again, like I'm not saying that everyone else should respond that way. But whenever Sam shows up, like whenever the, you know, that's Black Falcon, no, that's Captain America line happens. Like all these things that I know some people could write off as kind of cheesy work so much for me. And I can't, it's not a head thing. It's very much a heart thing where I'm sitting there and I tear up like whenever he's giving the speech, and especially when he takes Isaiah to the Smithsonian and Isaiah hugs him. And it's just this, like, it's just a uniquely powerful story. In that, like in what, especially in light of what we've been through in the past couple of years as a country and the way that we're trying to reckon with our own racial history here. And like, I just think that it is doing something so boldly. And on this last watch through, man, I think like Anthony Mackie just really rose to that challenge.
He did do well. He is definitely the highlight for sure for me.
And I think I totally agree with what you were saying. Like one thing, like his development was so great in a very specific way to this show to me. And that, like, we talked about how both this and WandaVision kind of ended up becoming origin stories, weirdly enough, for characters that we've known now for, you know, 6 years, 7 years. But I think what's unique about this is it was really like, it's the origin of him as like as a hero, you know, like in a very specific way. Like Wanda, it's a totally different, like not worse at all, but just a different thing. And we kind of talked about how it's sort of interesting because that's a little bit grayer where she's landing. But here, like watching that finale, it's like so much of what Sam has been thrust into since the Winter Soldier was kind of this like running all these missions and, you know, fighting all these battles. But there was something really kind of touching to me about the like how much the finale highlights him saving people and helping people, how much it goes back. It's all about him saving people. It's all about him helping people. And that goes all the way back to how he was first introduced in Winter Soldier. And like the conversations that he's having with Carly there at the end, like that really hits hard to me because you really feel that he is first and foremost just trying to, he's trying to help. Like he's trying to understand where she's, or show her that he understands where she's coming from. And he's really trying to talk it down. Like he's not out here trying to like, you know, kick names and take ass. And I just like, I think it resonates with me in this really unique way. And I love a bunch of other characters that we got as well that we talked about through this whole season. And obviously I think Sebastian Stan did a really good job too. But yeah, I think as I'm looking back on this, and as I'm about to say where this lands, it lands there because for whatever reason, this was just a uniquely touching story for me in Sam Wilson. So with all that said, and I'm curious to hear where it falls for you, as I'm looking here, we now have 25 MCU projects, which is wild. And I mean, I think by the end of this year, that'll be up to what, 30?
Yeah, something like that.
And so again, looking through all these, there are so many that I love so much. But for me, out of that 25, the Falcon and the Winter Soldier lands at number 15, which sounds low given how much I just praised it. But again, you have to think of how much is there that I just really love. For orientation purposes, that for me is sandwiched right between Captain America, the First Avenger, and Doctor Strange. And I really wrestled with the Doctor Strange thing, especially because that's one that's gone up for me even since we first reviewed that on the podcast.
That one goes up for you because of peer pressure, because of me, because of Kyle Cousins, because of your wife. Every viewing, you get a little more pressured into it. My wife. And so you
that's get fair. Peer pressured that's higher. but you know, the reason why ultimately I do think that those live in the same world in my mind, quality wise. And so the big thing for me was whether it goes above or below. And, I ultimately don't have, I know you have like a big emotional moment whenever Doctor Strange is out there with the Ancient One, like watching the snowfall. And I do feel that, but not anywhere near how much I feel these final moments with Sam here. So I think it gets the edge there. It may end up climbing over First Avenger with time. That's a difficult one because that holds such a kind of nostalgic space for me. But obviously Falcon the Winter Soldier is doing some work, doing like pushing some boundaries that Captain America the First Avenger wasn't.
So I don't know if this makes for good podcasting or not, but I kid you not, Robbie and I have never talked about this ever. I have the Falcon the Winter Soldier at 15. And on top of that, I have WandaVision at 6 still, which is exactly where you have it too, I think. Yep. So I think we literally copied each other without ever talking about it.
That's
maybe
hilarious.
It would make for a better podcast for us to disagree on it. What's interesting for me here is WandaVision at 6 is really high. I just can't justify moving it above Civil War, Ragnarok, Guardians 1, Endgame, or Infinity War. Only because of the impact those movies had, but I still feel moments in WandaVision as strong as some moments in those shows. So it's right there with Spider-Man Homecoming, and I've debated between those two, flip-flopping to 6 or 7, because Spider-Man Homecoming is so good on a rewatch. It's so hard to compare those two in particular, but it's flawless. So that's a hard
one. Where mine is too, though. WandaVision at 6 and Homecoming at 7.
Wow.
So I'm right there with you.
So for me, it's interesting because I have the Falcon and Winter Soldier at the same spot, 15, but my overarching feelings, I think, are just different than you for some reason. Like, I don't know that. So none of the moments in Falcon and Winter Soldier hit me like the moments with the movies around that area. So for me, it's Doctor Strange at 14. I have Guardians 2 at 16 and Cap 1 at 17. But even Guardians 2, which, you know, I don't like very much.
Mm-hmm.
I still feel some of the moments like Yondu's death more than anything I feel in Falcon and Winter Soldier. And in Doctor Strange, like you said, I do feel that conversation with the Ancient One more than anything in this show. But I think it's in that range because I acknowledge the quality of it and what it's trying to do. So my qualms with it are very different than my qualms with, say, like in Thor, the Dark World below it, I think the acting is just off at times, just straight up off, and the plot makes no sense, right? Whereas here, I don't ever feel necessarily like the acting is off. And the plot, for the most part, does make a ton of sense.
Mm-hmm.
But I just don't have that impact, that high-end impact to move it higher than that. So
right.
I guess I'm saying I agree with the same placement, and I agree with the epic rant you were just on. I just never feel it as much as you. Yeah. Is that fair? Can we just leave it there? Like, I just don't feel it as much. And maybe, honestly, when you rewatch WandaVision, maybe you'll never feel it like I do. Because, like, there's part of me where I want to put WandaVision as, like, a top four movie. And it's not, but it's just because, like, the high-end feel is so high-end.
Right.
The highs are so high.
Well, I do think this comes back to something you and I have talked about since the very beginning of this podcast, which is,
yes,
I feel like you tend to think, like, the moments that really get you pumped, I think, are whenever you have these people realizing their full potential.
That's
like,
fair.
You know, like with Wanda, like we've talked about, like, you know, these kind of like powered up moments, depending on the character, right? Not always, but whereas for me, I always really like these kind of like underdog sort of rising up against all odds, like Spider-Man at the end of Homecoming or like Cap, you know, I can do this all day moments.
Sure.
And I think Sam is sort of the ultimate version of that. So I think in some ways, like I think that's why maybe you resonate so strongly with that moment with Wanda. And I resonate so much with these moments with Sam.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I really like when the all-powerful characters go through stuff to become vulnerable and then finally realize how all-powerful they are, like
right.
Wanda or Thor for me.
Right.
That's a very good point. You know, this is a little bit off subject, but I think it's really fascinating. When I was rewatching WandaVision, I gave you a phone call, if you remember.
Mm-hmm.
And we got into this discussion about, I can't put my finger on what is it about these movies, about these characters that make you feel one way towards somebody and not another way towards a different character. And what I mean by that is certain moments just hit certain people so differently that you can't even like quantify, is it good or not? Because to some person it's effective and to the other person it's ineffective. Like, for example, my father didn't love WandaVision. He liked trying to figure out what was going on, but then when it was done, it was kind of like, that's not my vibe. But he loved Falcon Winter Soldier. And that's my own blood. And I'm almost the exact opposite.
Right.
Like Falcon and Winter Soldier for me would be towards the bottom of all movies for rewatchability. Okay. But what is it that like, why do I feel Thor's mother's death when it's in a movie that's objectively bad or sorry, not bad, but it's not on par right. with the other films in the MCU. First of
sure.
all, secondly, we have such a small amount of screen time with her. I don't know the number to it, but it's very few minutes.
Oh yeah. Especially pre-Endgame.
Right. And yet I feel that moment. I've always felt her as a character, like in Endgame when he gets that redemption with her. I feel that so heavily. But at the same time, like when Coulson dies, I don't feel anything. And I've had the same amount of screen time. I was told Coulson's a more important character than Thor's mother.
Yeah, give it more screen time for sure.
Right, and it's executed, I think, well, but nothing happens in my heart. Why do I love Gamora and Wanda, but I really don't like Carol? Like,
right.
What is it about the scene with Peter take my hand that gets me so emotional, chills, and sad? That just doesn't quite hit for you the same way. You like it, but it's never done the same thing. And my point of saying all this is I don't have an answer. For some reason, certain things are always just going to be different for certain people.
That is fascinating to
think about. Like, what's the psyche behind it, you know?
I mean, that's a great, it's a great question. I mean, because I do think, I think part of that in terms of deaths and, you know, and there's a lot of conversation to be had in terms of, you know, the kind of literary tropes that lead, like what on-screen deaths are supposed to be doing. And I think a lot of it, for better or for worse, is to motivate our protagonists in one direction or the other. And I think that for me, you know, I would feel the same. Like we talked a lot on our first rewatch about Coulson, and I like Coulson as what he was supposed to be during that first phase, which is kind of a certain level of connective tissue and kind of this like more of the everyman perspective amidst all of these like superheroes. But I would actually kind of agree with you even then, though, that as much as I love Avengers, I mean, so much more than Thor the Dark World, the difference in those scenes are whenever Coulson dies, you know, it's actually funny because it's Thor doing the reacting and they don't really have a relationship that resonates with me in the way that obviously like Thor and his mom do. And I do think Hemsworth is uniquely good at conveying this, when you see him sad, you are sad. Like, and I've seen a lot of people talk about this through the whole thing. Like, whenever you see Thor down, it is like a heartbreaking thing. And I think that's why his arc ends up working so well when they finally kind of realized that.
So well. Ugh.
But it's like, and you know, it just doesn't connect as much with Coulson, rightly, whereas like even with a character that we haven't gotten that much time with because of the way that he's able to root that relationship kind of in his own performance and then the way that's like really elevated by what we get in Endgame makes it work. And I'm not just going to go through.
But that's just one example, by the way. I threw that out off the top of my head. That was not pre-thought out.
No, for sure. And that's what I was about to say. I'm not going to go through each example that you set out and kind of go through each factor. I think my point in saying that is, for me, I do think that it's maybe it maybe is an actor specific thing sometimes. Like
sometimes I think that's fair. I think that's a part of it. I think the music that's paired with it, the visual, there's a lot of things that can go into a specific moment. But I actually kind of want to bring it back to what you said that I love, which is I think you did hit the nail on the head. Because for example, we like both Spider-Man movies, right? We both do.
Mm-hmm.
But you're probably a little bit more drawn to the end of Homecoming when he's like got Vulture and he's like, I'm trying to help you. I'm trying to save you. Like,
yeah.
You're probably more drawn to that. And I'm probably drawn to the very end of Far From Home where he finally realizes Peter Tingle and like goes to town. You know what I'm saying? Like,
that's a great example.
And Happy stands up to Nick Fury. And like, it's the culmination of them realizing their power and Spider-Man's power. Whereas you're probably more into the, I'm still trying to help you. You know, thing. And that's true. Like that's probably another reason why when Captain America in the first Avenger is sinking his ship, you're like, oh, it kills me that he's already an underdog and he doesn't get to be with Peggy. And just for me, it doesn't move me that much.
Right.
But then like when Captain America picks up the hammer, you even said at first you were a little bit like, oh, okay. But for me, I'm like, oh my gosh, that's the best Captain America moment we've ever had.
That's so true.
So I think you were right. I think that's the difference is like, I love seeing Cap finally get to like be his full self, you know?
Right. Well, I think that's, it's so interesting because.
And you I think, too, by the way.
Yeah, obviously. No, for sure. But I think to your point, if I had to rank moments with Cap, I would, and I'd be curious actually to hear from folks. Maybe we'll do a little poll on this just for fun.
Yeah, this is way off topic. Sorry.
No, I know for sure. But hey, it's been a while. We've got to get it all out of our system.
That's right.
But for me, if we're looking at you know top Cap moments in my favorite MCU film, which is Endgame, I would rank Cap holding the hammer, which again is fantastic, under Cap holding the half-broken shield and facing Thanos' army. Like that, right. Like that's the moment that hits harder for me, is it's like, okay, this is who this character is. Ultimately, it's this guy who is like really, he started out as this like scrawny guy that just wanted to do whatever he could to you know, fight for what he thought was right. And now he's up against these impossible odds and he's just going to go for it, even though he's clearly going to get annihilated more than like, oh, here we go. It's like Cap wielding Mjolnir, you know?
Right. I think with the sad moments, because we're kind of talking now with like chill inducing moments, with the sad moments, it's probably more the moment that was specifically created paired with the music and the acting, like the performance itself. Like, for example, I don't know that I'll ever feel any Carol Danvers moment like I feel seven of the moments in WandaVision, like when her and Vision are having the discussion about grief. Well, part of that is the music is absolutely unbelievable. Like, it's top notch. It's like, it's tier one of music in the MCU. That's the first thing.
Yeah.
The second thing is I feel like I'm so bought into Elizabeth Olsen's performance there and Paul Bettany's, not just that scene. When she's saying goodbye to him, like I was legitimately crying on a rewatch, crying. I posted a picture. Just the dialogue there, that performance with that soundtrack, when you hear it, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. With the sad moments like that, I think it's probably more driven by that acting. More than necessarily the big moments. Like when Thor has his realization of what are you the god of again, that's not an acting thing that he gets hit by lightning and falls down to Immigrant Song, right? So it's not that I'm like that. There's more that went into the chill inducing moment on a different front than just acting, but it's really hard to have a really sad moment that's acted poorly. And so if I'm not bought in to you as an actor or an actress, then those moments just don't pay off. But it's just an interesting conversation because it's even possible in a movie that I don't like Guardians of the Galaxy 2, I don't like the movie. I can still really get moved emotionally when Yondu saying goodbye and that whole ending.
Right.
And I don't even like the movie that much.
Right.
So it's hard to put into words.
I think it's not even necessarily just the actor as much as the way the actor embodies the character in a way that makes sense, that feels like it's like they're really like combined into one entity. Like I think, and what I mean by that is like, it's not necessarily that I think you're saying that Brie Larson is not acting well as much as like, has there really been a moment yet where you're like, all right, I've got a good read on Carol Danvers. I know who this character is. The way that I feel like we immediately did with like Robert Downey Jr. and with Chris Evans.
But I wonder if like deep down, if you talk to a psychologist, if there was something about like inherently in the way I was raised, if there's something that I just resonate more instantly with a personality like Tony, let's say, and you just instantly resonate more with a Steve, like right away. So even if they're acting it well or not, like I just wonder if Brie Larson's never going to be able to get there for me inherently versus Elizabeth Olsen. Because Elizabeth Olsen's objectively less known and less decorated as an actress. But I just inherently, I don't know what it is, like deep in there, I wonder if there's just a difference there. What you should take away from this episode is I love Elizabeth Olsen and Paul Bettany way more than I ever thought I would. Like, I can't do an episode without talking about them now. I don't know how I'm this invested, but I am. Where are we left in the MCU at this point before we close? I thought that was an interesting point to get into here, because so we had WandaVision. We know that a white Vision is out there, and that's a separate little subplot. And I'm not going to get into every little subplot, but my big takeaway is it feels kind of like Wanda is setting up for some kind of pairing with Doctor Strange, and that maybe on that front, they're going to be diving into the whole multiverse, time travel, trippy, all the other realities. Like, that's kind of their phase. I don't know, will they ever interact with Sam or Buck? Like, and on the Sam and Bucky front, it feels like we're left with a very like grounded political, like a political thing that's brewing, kind of. And I'm fascinated to see where you think, like, now that Sam has become Captain America, is he going to ever interact with Wanda, Scarlet Witch, in the way that we did like pre these Avengers movies? Like, will we ever get a team up of them? Or will he be aware of what's happening with Wanda now? Like, does the news get out? And he's now Captain America. He's not just doing side missions. He's a figure. What do you think about all that? And where we left with John Walker? Like, is that setting something else up?
Yeah. No, I think that those are great questions. And those are some of the things I was thinking about. Because, yeah, I mean, everything I was talking about loving about Sam, it leaves him with a certain kind of moral authority that I think Steve had that John never did. And I think that's, you know, a contrast we highlighted and a contrast the show was highlighting, where I would love, like, I love that Sam is now really, we've really earned that with him by the end of this show, to where I would love a moment of Sam confronting Wanda if she's getting out of line, right? And obviously, like, he's way outclassed by her. I think virtually everyone in the MCU is at this point. But I think that would make for kind of all the more, again, that's sort of a classic Cap situation. And I really like that, the dynamic that's setting up here, where it does feel like what you're saying, we're back to kind of some of these building blocks. It's not quite sure where everything's going to fall, like the way it was in phase one, where it was clear we were working towards this moment where everyone was going to have to come together to fight some bigger battle. Yeah, I don't know that's in the cards, at least for a while. And it's hard for me to, in a fun way, to read the tea leaves and see, like, okay, we're getting Shang-Chi, we're getting Black Widow, which is largely set in the past. We're getting the Eternals, which who even knows? Like, and then Spider-Man, which, if that's involving, you know, the any kind of multiversal component, it's like, I don't know. We you're definitely right. We definitely have different threads, and I'm kind of intrigued by how much I can't see how they're all necessarily going to come together yet.
Besides Black Widow, because I think Black Widow was supposed to release 2 years ago, and I think they wanted it to get out while we were still in the Endgame type phase, right? Like, you're still in that mindset a little bit. I think they wanted that out. It wasn't. But besides that movie, yeah, building blocks is the right word that I'm fascinated by, because they're introducing new characters and they're taking small characters that we didn't have much time with and giving us tons of time with. So, yeah, I don't know where it's going either. I don't know if it's heading towards a disagreement, or is it heading towards a teaming up of some sort, or is it just these are all smaller, isolated stories for a while that are kind of reflecting on the effects of Endgame. But I was looking at the roster coming up, and it's like Loki, that seems like it's going to be kind of its own thing, you know, separate. It seems like Shang-Chi's a new character. The Eternals are new characters. The What If is kind of just playing with like other scenarios for fun. Right. That's not pushing this story further. Like, it's just, we're in an interesting spot. It feels a lot like phase one again, is my point.
Yeah.
Where we don't know these characters and we don't know what's going to happen. And we're just having to like restart, kind of.
Well, and even in terms of kind of what we know of, like, Spider-Man is one that seems like it will probably have some implications potentially.
Yeah, Spider-Man seems like it could be the connective tissue almost. And Spider-Man is the one that could theoretically bridge Foz and WandaVision, kind of.
True.
If it gets into the multiverse thing with Doctor Strange 2-ish, and then it's also like, if it's at all like, hey, hide your identity, like they were teasing at the end of Far From Home, ground level, like, does that involve like a political ground level thing, right?
Yeah, no, and that's a good point. Like I do think that that could be what, I mean, it's really interesting, honestly, how much Doctor Strange is seemingly going to take a center role here, because...
Well, that's because there's not that many main characters left. Like, we read this article complaining about the Marvel Universe has too many characters, but I'm kind of like, they've done an incredible job of telling the Steve, Tony, Natasha, Bruce story. Mm-hmm. And for the most part, they're not done. But you know what I'm saying? Those are kind of off the board and done. So now I like that this new phase is going to have to be somebody. So it might as well be Doctor Strange, Spider-Man, Captain Marvel, new Captain America, you know, and let's go from there.
Well, and I'm so glad you brought that article up. I know we need to wrap here in a second, but I think that's the perfect place to talk about it. I wanted to speak to that for a moment. I don't know if anyone saw it going around, but it was, the thesis was essentially, Marvel's about to get itself into a situation because it has too many characters. And it's just interesting to me because, again, I'm not saying that these movies are perfect. I obviously love them a lot, but it's not that I can't acknowledge that they have their flaws. But I do think it's hilarious how many times in the history of this film franchise, everyone's like, okay, here it is. The ship's sinking. It's going down. Like, they just can't do it. And I'm like, why is every, like, at some point, yeah, they're going to do something that's bad. Like, sure. But I don't know why we all, like, every time there's like a pause, there's some kind of think piece that comes out and they're like, all right, yep, this is it. There are too many characters. It's too whatever. And it's just every time that's happened, like, you know, I always reference, like, I remember all the pieces whenever Paul Rudd was cast as Ant-Man, and everyone was like, oh, too silly. Like, this is where it just isn't going to work. And then you see that go on to be kind of this key component of Endgame, right? And other things, right, obviously. But, yeah, I just think that it's – one, I think it's silly that we have to keep having this conversation. Like, if you're a fan of the stuff, great. If you're not, that's totally fine. Like, no one's forcing you to be – but I just don't understand this constant dialogue. And two, that point specifically, I just think is so funny because that is like, that has been the fear since the first Avengers film. Like, everyone was like, oh, it's never going to work. You can't have like four or five lead actors like that. All like, how would that even work? Like, how can you have all of these big name folks sharing screen time? And it obviously worked, and it's continued to work. And Infinity War is the culmination of that. And it is such a massive success that I just think looking at it now and saying that Marvel's suffering from a too many characters problem is just sort of silly to me.
This article that we're referencing came from the perspective of Drax and Dave Bautista saying that the third Guardians will probably be his last installment in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And he's a little bit bummed that we didn't get to dive more into Drax as a character and that they kind of made him just a one-trick pony, just being a funny guy. And while I agree with that assessment, because you know that's a huge part of my issue with Guardians 2, is that in Guardians 1, Drax's jokes felt really natural, but you still get the moments of, I'll fight with you, and then in the end, I'll get to see my wife and daughter again. And, like, you get this emotional core all of a sudden, whereas Guardians 2 is all just joke, poop jokes, literally. I mean, what are we doing? While I think that's true, I also think it's funny that, like, okay, first of all, they were telling the story of the main characters in the Infinity Saga, and Drax was not one of them. Every movie in the history of movies has side characters. It's not like when you watch Wedding Crashers, you get a huge deep dive on, you know,
Todd.
Yeah. It's like, they don't go into every character and tell you every little motivation from every character, like whether Drax likes it or not. Like, maybe there's a more interesting story to be told there, and I would be totally down to hear it. But if Drax ends up just being a side character, that's what it is. It's a side character. Like, that doesn't mean you have too many characters because there's a character we didn't spend five movies on. Right. Like, so that bothers me in and of itself. But also, Marvel is already currently doing an incredible job of taking these quote-unquote side characters and giving them shows now.
Exactly, exactly.
Okay, Jimmy Woo, total side character you don't know anything about, but now he's brought into WandaVision and you know so much more about him. So give it time. Right. They're telling the story of all these characters when it needs to be fleshed out. So I'm with you. The whole point that there's too many characters is ridiculous because the whole fun of this is that bringing them all together has this payoff that you've already individually invested into each one of them.
Right. Well, and that's my thing is I just think it's funny. Like, in the case of Dave Bautista, I agree with you that I think that that's a very fair complaint. I do not think that that has anything to do with the amount of characters in the MCU or even the amount of characters in the Guardians world. Like, because I would say, like, I think Rocket has gotten pretty similar screen time to Drax, at least prior to Endgame, because obviously Drax was dusted and Rocket wasn't. But Rocket, I think we've gotten great emotional moments with just because that's the way that James Gunn and others chose to take that character. And so it's not like an issue of, oh, there's so many characters that eventually some are just going to get short shrift. Like, that was just a direction that they chose to take Drax in. He's got a lot of screen time. It's just all used for joke stuff. And I think that that's what he's complaining about. And I just Agreed. Think it's funny. It's interesting to me because I don't think we can... It would be one thing if WandaVision and Falcon Winter Soldier were just these chaotic, trying to do way too much, introducing a ton of characters, like crazy things, and you're like, all right, they're trying to do too much. But I would say both of those, however you feel about them, are the opposite. They're both like WandaVision... especially is a deep dive emotionally into a particular character. Falcon Winter Soldier is a deep dive emotionally into two characters and one in particular, in my opinion. And so it's like, it's just a strange, thing. And we're giving it probably too much time, but I just think that it's a good time. Like as we're reflecting on these new installments and kind of looking ahead to just see, like, I think Marvel's doing it. They're introducing new characters, but they're willing to go deep with them. And as long as they're willing to do that, then I'm on board.
That's what I was going to say earlier, is not only do the individual characters lead up to a big event, and that's part of the fun of it. Not only that, but now a lot of the main characters are off the board and they're giving more time to these characters that didn't have time before. So to say there's too many just doesn't make sense to me. I think those articles, by the way, last thing, just kind of come from people that are not that invested in this. They haven't done the work. They just see, oh, there's another movie coming out and it's a new character I don't recognize. Like, I don't know the name Shang-Chi. There's just too many. There's too many characters. I don't know. Like, it's just, if they have a problem because people like Drax didn't get a full story. It's like, well, that's maybe a different decision, like you're saying, but it's not a character issue. Okay. Thank you, everyone, for coming to our TED Talk.
Our multiple TED Talks.
Yeah, this is one of the most unique episodes we've ever recorded because we went through our reflection of WandaVision and Falcon Winter Soldier, which I didn't even tell you we were going to reflect on WandaVision, and yet here we are. And then just 20 million other tangents after that had nothing to do with that. But I hope your takeaway is that we love these movies and we just haven't talked in 2 weeks, so this is what happens. This is what happens when you put a quarter in, you gotta let the whole jukebox play, as they say. thank you so much for listening, everybody. This week, we're gonna have a special interview episode. Can't wait for you to hear that. Follow us, email us, all of that. Rate, review, subscribe, all that helps. Next week, we're gonna have a merchandise item and some big announcements next Monday. We can't wait for you to hear all of that. And so we'll see you next time on Friends from Work.
The search for truth never ends. Introducing June's Journey, a hidden object mobile game with a captivating story. connect with friends, explore the roaring 20s, and enjoy thrilling activities and challenges while supporting environmental causes. After 7 years, the adventure continues with our immersive travels feature. Explore distant cultures and engage in exciting experiences. There's always something new to discover. Are you ready? Download June's Journey now on Android or iOS.